Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
When the US dollar weakens, that's usually, not always, but it's usually a good sign for commodities.
What is something that every advisor should do for their client portfolios?
We should own resources, I mean.
Yeah. Are we at the start of a commodity super cycle? That is what we are asking today's guest. From Equity Mates, this is Basis Points, a show that helps advisors find small improvements that compound into big outcomes. I'm Bryce, and with my co-host Ren, today we're speaking to Greg Cassidy, Senior Analyst at Milford, about the big factors that are driving the commodity rally. Ren, good to be with you.
Bryce, good to be with you. Excited for this one. Aussie investors love resources stocks, but turns out as we enter 2026, the world loves resources stocks. That has certainly been on the tip of everyone's tongue. You leveraged hard into the silver rally recently and got absolutely cleaned out.
True.
But everything, gold, silver, uranium, lithium, copper, tin, everywhere you look, commodities seem to be running. And today we're going to speak to an expert to help us make heads and tails of it.
That's it. So we're going to speak to Greg about the major factors that are driving the commodity rally here in Australia and globally. We're going to then talk about some of the major commodities that he thinks will lead the charge, and then bring it all together and talk about how he thinks advisors can position client portfolios so that they are not going to miss out.
Now, before we get into it, we want to say a massive thank you to our three series sponsors here at Basis Points: Milford, Orbis Investments, and SIBO. But today, a particular thank you to Milford.
Milford is Australia's boutique investment firm that works hard for your clients to capture the upside and minimise the downside.
Milford's active management investment philosophy means they keep a close eye on the market and look beyond current trends.
They know that in volatile times, capital preservation is as important as delivering long-term risk-adjusted returns.
If you'd like to find out more about what Milford can do for your clients, check out milfordasset.com.au.
Before you invest, be sure to read the Milford Fund's product disclosure statements and target market determinations at milfordasset.com.au.
Thanks to Milford and all of our sponsors for helping us keep all of our content here at Basis Points free and accessible.
And a reminder that all of the content is approved by the FAAA for CPD accreditation. At the end of this interview, you can complete a short quiz and we'll send you your certificate.
All right, well, Bryce, with that said, let's get to our conversation with Greg Cassidy, where we ask the big question: are we at the start of a commodity supercycle?
Greg, welcome to Basis Points.
Thanks for having me.
So we'll start with the big question. Are we in the starting stages of a commodity supercycle?
Well, we could be. It's early days. There's a lot of, well, it's 2026 to start off really well. There's a lot of price movement. There's a lot of volatility as well. So who knows exactly where we are, but there are certainly some similarities compared to the last big one we had sort of early in this century, but there's also a lot of differences. And so, you know, we're early on into it, but I kind of think there's the setup for 2026 is really positive.
Which is great news for Aussie investors. Love a mining stock. I guess we want to start with the big picture, talk about some of the factors driving this like overall surge, and then we want to dig into some specific commodities that you think are particularly interesting. So let's start with the big picture. And when we were preparing for this interview and reading some of the stuff you've produced, we sort of saw three big factors emerge: geopolitics, decarbonisation, and AI. And we want to take them one by one. So let's start with geopolitics. It seems to be leading most news bulletins these days. Yeah. What, I guess, from a resources investor point of view, what are the stories that matter and how are they translating to an investment story?
Yeah, so those three factors probably, yeah, they line up with the way we look at things, and they're all kind of interlinked as well. So if you look at deglobalization as one, a lot of it's to do with Trump. Every day it's Trump. There's just a lot of uncertainty. People don't really know what's happening. And you look at gold, part of the reason gold's rallying is because there's that uncertainty, there's that debasement, et cetera, and people want real assets. That's where commodities, you have real assets. So you look at that, as I said, that uncertainty is leading to potentially, sort of read quite a lot about a potential split in the world. So two spheres, one an American sphere and one a Chinese sphere. And we only just have to look at what's happened, say, with rare earths with China, for example, that China dominates the processing rare earths. It's around 90% of the rare earths are processed by China. And pretty much the only one that doesn't is Lynas, which is listed here, and they've got a processing plant in Malaysia. And so the Chinese have been able to use that as like an economic weapon. Mm. And the Americans are going, well, we'd better do something about that. And hence you've seen why there's been a lot of activity by the American government and also the Australian and Chinese and Japanese governments and others to try and shore that up. So there's that security of supply that is part of this whole picture as well. And so when we think about deglobalization, we kind of feel that as that world splits, certain commodities in certain areas are going to be much more really crucial to the way that we operate. I mean, most of the things I can see in this studio, a lot of them are quite crucially, like they're quite rare in some cases, but there's also an element of security that's needed to get that. So that's probably the first thing on deglobalization. There's a whole bunch of other factors. Spilling over, I think, into decarbonisation, which is obviously a longer trend from the environment, et cetera. The Chinese seem to be leading a lot of the deglobalisation efforts at the moment. And part of the reason is because they want to be less reliant on fossil fuels from imports and other areas. So it's partly a self-sufficient push by them as well. That, I think, is sort of, as I said, linking a lot of these up together. So decarbonisation, I think most people know, it's electrification, it's getting off fossil fuels. So we know we've seen a rollout of EVs, which has mixed success. It's very popular in China at the moment, but America's kind of almost going backwards. Here in Australia, we're sort of doing okay. So there's that lithium demand. There's also the copper and everything, which a lot of people, investors, are kind of aware of. But there's, as I said, that's kind of linked in to that deglobalization. And then you also have even some of the older commodities like steel. You think about how many transmission lines that need to be built, new wind farms, and you know, they all require a lot of steel. So even the old boring commodities like iron ore and steel still have some sort of import. And then you think about gas. Gas is seen as a really good sort of intermittent source of power. And so that kind of blends really well with renewables. So you kind of see that even in the Australian grid as well.
Mm.
And then AI, well, that's obviously really taking off. That's the real catchphrase of the last 12 months or so. And that itself is now, it's sort of getting up to speed or trying to get up to speed with just how much of an impact that's having on electricity demand. But that then has a flow-on effect of the commodities as well, because while we're trying to decarbonize, we also have this growth in electricity demand. As you know, these data centers, they're very energy intensive. They use a lot of water. And some of them are like the size of 3 or 4 football fields or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
just think about how much steel is needed in that. And then with all the little copper wiring and aluminium wiring as well.
Isn't Meta building one that's like almost the size of Manhattan?
I don't know. Jeez. But just think about how much that's stuff, like how much steel, all the, I don't know what the numbers are in terms of what demand that is for commodities yet. I mean, it's still, as I said, we're learning, and just seems like every day or every week there's more CapEx being spent. So that's certainly a really positive medium-term trend. And so that's why, even though we've got volatility at the moment when we're doing this, that longer-term outlook still looks really positive, because you can just see that demand is really attractive. And then if we talk probably about some of the commodities in a sec, the supply looks a bit tricky. And so that's really positive for price in that respect as well. So there's demand and supply factors that are potentially really positive for this.
Mm. So you mentioned there earlier that a lot of the governments around the world are trying to shore up a lot of these supply chains, commodity supply chains. We've seen here in Australia deals around ASM, BlueScope and the like. Do you expect to see more takeover talk here on the ASX for listed companies?
Definitely. I mean, we're still waiting to hear. Hopefully when people see this, they might know what's happened with Glencore and Rio. Mm. So it's going to be a mega merger.
Yeah.
And it's mainly been driven by the need for copper. So Glencore have all these copper deposits, but they're not necessarily the best at bringing that forward. They're not the best miners, but Rio's a really good miner, but they don't have enough copper projects in their portfolio. So that's part of the reason that they're talking, and we hopefully get some outcome soon. So expect more of that. I mean, in the case of BlueScope, part of the attraction for the consortium, but the American company Steel Dynamics wants the North Star assets because it's quite strategic. America has become more protectionist, and so that asset's become even more crucial. Once again, steel is a crucial element or crucial product that's there. So expect more of these deals, and I don't necessarily see a lot in, say, gold or silver. There's still always talk on that.
But yeah.
They can't help themselves a lot of the time, especially Western Australian miners. But in some of your copper is certainly the one where there's any weakness in a lot of copper miners. We saw that with Oz Minerals a few years ago. Share price was weak and BHP just went bang.
Yeah.
And took it, and that looks like a brilliant move. So I do expect more. That's certainly something we look at. And obviously the Australian market resources is such a big part of our index that it, you know, there's so many companies to choose from. And a lot of them do invest around the world as well. So they're not necessarily going to be as prone to the government agency, FIRB, or something like that. If the assets are in Chile or something, it's not going to be as much of an issue there.
Yeah. So on that geopolitics point, you mentioned the splintering and the world kind of splintering into two spheres of influence, China and the US. Do you worry about Australia being kind of wedged where we naturally fit in the US sphere of influence? A lot of US companies and the US government are looking at Aussie miners, but at the same time, the biggest buyer of our minerals is China?
Yep. And I've asked some of the big companies that question, and you don't necessarily get a straight answer for obvious reasons. It is a risk because, as I said, China's relying on so much from import iron ore, even lithium, copper, definitely. They're trying to get off fossil fuels, hence that big decarbonisation push as well. That is certainly a risk, because if that sphere, those two worlds kind of split, then that does put a big pressure on us because we are so reliant on China for not just our export of commodities, but our imports for so many things that are made here. Mm. So that what definitely worries, and I'm sure it worries the government, it worries all the major miners as well, how that split. And obviously the government's trying to slowly walk on both sides, but I don't know how, you know, with Trump, who knows where it's going to go. He's obviously fixated on other things at the moment, but what happens next year, etc. Or, you know, even later this year, it's a long time away.
Even next week.
Exactly. So,
far out. In terms of decarbonisation, like, is the investment in that space spread globally, or are there just a number, or I guess, are there particular countries that are really leading in that space?
Yeah, I think China's certainly one. I mean, obviously here we're doing a good job on the grid. I even got a battery the other day, home battery, so that's my new toy. So my wife and daughters roll their eyes at me with a new toy. But yeah, there is, it's also you make money or save money on it. So it's the economics are working. And that's why I think ultimately even like America, which is going backwards a bit on this, the economics do stack up in many cases. And as we've seen the fall in solar prices and our battery prices, I think, yeah, you will see that. Europe, I mean, we look at EV numbers. We get that sent every month, et cetera. Last year was a good year for EV in China and Europe, and America went backwards. Mm. This year it might slow down because all the subsidies have sort of been reduced. So it is trending up, but it potentially could slow this year. At the same time, then you can see the rollout of batteries has just been huge in for the lithium, and the lithium market was, and we talk about that later, but that was in a big surplus only a few months ago. Now it's in a tight deficit and the prices have just rallied. So, yeah, I think in places like China, certainly can see the, if they are going to this sphere, that they can control a lot more in the world. They've been able to export a lot of their problems away through steel, through cars. So, as I said, yeah, China's leading the push. Europe's sort of in the middle and then America's kind of falling behind.
So we mentioned three big themes, geopolitics or decoupling, decarbonisation, and then AI. Are there any other big macro factors that are driving this commodity rally that we should be aware of?
So there's, if you think about gold, so gold has rallied, I don't know how many times, I said it would be more than double over the last few years. And a lot of that's to do with these debasements and even the recent rally in gold and silver and other commodities. A lot of that to do with weakness in the US dollar. With that uncertainty, there's that search for just, I suppose, an insurance policy to have these real assets and have it as a store of wealth. And people can also see, in particular in some of the commodities that have industrial uses, that there's a shortage coming, maybe not definite, but there's certainly, nothing's definite, but there's definitely a shortage that people can see because of a strong demand and or a lack of supply. It's just getting harder and harder to find some of these commodities and bring them to mine or to mine them. So they're probably the main things we look at. As I said, there's a lot of that uncertainty. Keep an eye on the US dollar, something I always look at. When the US dollar weakens, that's usually, not always, but it's usually a good sign for commodities.
So on that, do you have a view on the US dollar for this year?
I'm a humble Aussie equity analyst trying to pick the US dollars tough.
Yeah.
It's weird at the moment because there's a lot of countries, including Australia, debating about whether or not to jack up interest rates, whereas America, they're still talking to bring them down, and the new Fed chairman, who's likely to be picked up, he wants to push interest rates down, debate as to how much. So the view is that the Aussie dollar probably can at least stay here. And there's, I've certainly read a few brokers who are pushing mid to low 70 cents by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that's to do with how much the RBA raises rates, and then where commodities continue to really rally and we get one or two interest rate hikes, you would think the Aussie dollar would rally against the US dollar. And it depends on what Mr. Trump does as well. Does he rein in some of his things, or does he keep going with the chaos? We got the midterm elections coming up in November, so that's something that there's certainly a view in the markets that he's going to do a lot more to help propel the economy so that they don't get smashed in the election in November.
Mm-hmm. So, Greg, we want to dig into some specific commodities that are leading the charge. At the time of recording, gold and silver have come off somewhat, but they've had pretty incredible 12 past 24 months, as you've spoken about. Mm-hmm. Other commodities are also hitting record highs as well. What are the commodities that you're watching the closest?
You certainly watch gold, and part of the reason we're based in Martin Place in Sydney, and every time we walk out of the building, there's the bullion shop out the front.
Yeah, yeah. Have you lined up at all?
I actually went and got an X-ray the other day of my foot. Luckily, it wasn't broken, but I stood at the end of it. So I just took up and just said, oh, I relented, I'm lining up. With all jokes aside, there are a lot of people who've made some money on that who've lined up for a few hours, and the lineup still is pretty long. Some of my colleagues were asking them yesterday morning at 6:30 in the morning, are you lining up to buy or sell? And they said, no, we're buying.
Wow.
Even after the big pullback that we had over the weekend. So
have they heard of gold ETFs? That's what I've been doing in that line.
this is the thing. It's real assets. So the thing, you can actually own gold, I think, that or silver. I think that's part of the attraction, because you can actually physically own it. So I think that's part of the attraction, but I take your point.
So what, retail is buying the dip?
Well, you've seen that in the broader market. The thing about in America, when every time there's been any sort of major pullback in tech stocks, a lot buy the dip.
Yeah.
So, gold and silver on that front, they are sort of, I started seeing late 2025, we started seeing some of the other commodities, the industrial commodities like copper, like lithium, well, not so much lithium, it's separate, but aluminium, even zinc and nickel, were rallying a bit just because they're on board. So there's this push to get real assets, own these assets. There's also some of the specifics to their supply and demand story. So we are looking very closely at copper's one. Copper is a big part of decarbonisation, so it's got a broader use across the economy. There's some really positive demand potential as all these new areas need a lot of copper.
Yeah, particularly AI data centres and like the amount of copper that's used to build racks and servers and
big time,
everything.
Yeah, just think about that. So that is interesting because at the same time, the supply side is disappointing. So last year we had quite a few big mines either shut or have had major disruptions. So you've kind of seen the market flip from a surplus to a deficit pretty quickly. Reading not that long ago, I think it was BHP did a report out. Obviously, they're spending a lot of money over the next decade or so on copper, so they're talking their own book, but they were saying that they can see, I think, a 70% increase in the copper demand for the next, I think, out to 2040. So normally copper's been growing around 1-2% per annum, but they see it going into the twos, if not higher. And I think that's probably not even including a lot of those data center numbers. So maybe it's looking at 3. And the problem is that the copper mines are just getting harder to new ones to find. They're in either riskier locations, deeper, lower grade, more expensive to bring out. So copper is certainly one that's looking really attractive.
Do you have a favourite copper play?
We have. There's really not a lot to play in the Aussie market, which is disappointing. Unlike, say, gold or iron ore in the old days. But old days, how old am I? There's a few. There's Capstone and Samphire, the pure plays in the Aussie market. There are some smaller ones as well, but at least those ones, you've got production today and they're making a lot of money at the moment. And they do have, especially Capstone, do have production growth as well.
So gold, copper, what are some of the other commodities that you find yourself spending the most time on?
So lithium. So lithium's one that certainly caused quite a few grey hairs over the last 10 years. Because it's a fairly immature market, it tends to be more volatile. And compounding that is the fact that you've got very rapid demand growth coming from EVs and now energy storage systems, ESS batteries. That's seen demand grow really quickly. And so you get these periods like we're currently having and like we had back in 2015, 2016, and then 2023, where the demand just grows ahead of supply. But you then get the supply response and then the supply grows too fast, it's lumpy, and then it swamps the market. So you do expect a lot of volatility in that market. I think as it matures, it probably will become less, not sure the word fun is the word, but certainly less volatile. And so lithium is certainly one that when the price goes high, it's number three on the periodic table. It's not that unique, but it is quite hard to process. And obviously there's quite a few ways to play it on the Aussie market as well, both assets here in production, assets overseas, and there's also a lot of development projects as well. So there's plenty of ways to play lithium. Aluminium, yeah, I mean, you got Alcoa, South 32. Aluminium's kind of described as a poor man's copper. It's always for the probably 20, 30 years, it always had all the too much supply coming from China. The Chinese have stopped at around 45 million tonnes a year, so they say that's a capacity. And so the supply outlook for aluminium doesn't look too bad now. And so you've got demand growing. You've seen quite a bit of substitution. So even Alcoa was saying the other day that they can see that the price of copper has gone up so much that they can see up to 800,000 tonnes a year of copper. And I think the market's around 24 million tonnes a year at the moment. 800,000 tonnes they can see quite readily over a year be converted into aluminium. So just think about some of the copper wirings in an air conditioning unit. They can make them into aluminium. So it's kind of lifting all boats in some respect. Where there are shortages, you will see other commodities benefit. And even, I mean, we still look at gas. I mean, as I touched on before, LNG, obviously that's a big area where a lot of countries can sort of get off coal, go with gas, and that also blends really well with renewables because you've got more flexibility having a gas peaker than a coal plant.
Yeah, well, on gas specifically, we're just seeing reports out of Europe that they're getting close to crisis levels of gas storage back to 2022 levels. The US has obviously had their extreme weather. What do you think the outlook for LNG is this year?
So obviously they're going through winter, so that always gets a bit tight at this sort of towards the end of winter. There's been some disruptions with a freeze in America, so that could displace a bit of shipments. But longer term, there's a lot of new supply coming in LNG from Qatar and America in particular. I mean, Woodside have a massive project in Louisiana that they're building. So there is a lot of supply in LNG coming. So is the demand there? It depends on the price. So one thing I've sort of done a bit of digging in is that the Europeans and Japanese are not as price sensitive, but countries like India and Vietnam, et cetera, they will buy a lot of LNG if it's cheap. So there is a natural floor. So I'm not perhaps as wary on the future of LNG as I was, say, 6 months ago, because I can see a bit of a flaw, because if you can get cheap gas, why not get it? And so I think I'm probably warming a little bit to gas.
So does that make you a bit warmer to Woodside?
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, you've still got this huge gas project. It's really, without boring people, the complication with Louisiana is that they'll be buying Henry Hub gas, which is the domestic market. They don't own the gas, so they have to buy it off the market. And then they're going to freeze it, ship it to Europe or Asia, and then hopefully the LNG price is high enough to cover. And so that arbitrage could go really high, could go really small. But they argue they know what they're doing. And they quote Macquarie Bank, and still we'll see how they've gone this year. But you know, in the past, they've made a lot of money trading gas in America.
Yeah, right. Well, Greg, we're going to take a quick break, and then on the other side, we're going to look at what commodity matters most for us here in Australia. We'll be right back.
Thanks to Milford for sponsoring this episode of Basis Points.
Milford is Australia's boutique investment firm that works hard for your clients to capture the upside and minimise the downside.
Milford's active management investment philosophy means they keep a close eye on the markets and look beyond current trends.
They know that in volatile times, capital preservation is just as important as long-term risk-adjusted returns.
If you'd like to find out more about what Milford can do for your clients, check out milfordasset.com.au.
Before you invest, be sure to read the Milford Fund's product disclosure statements and target market determinations at milfordasset.com.au. Welcome back to Basis Points. We're here with Greg, senior analyst at Milford, talking about the super cycle in commodities that we are potentially about to experience here in Australia, potentially. Greg, when it comes to us here in Australia and the Australian economy and Australian investors, what do you think, what commodity matters the most?
Historically, it's always been iron ore. So that's a big part of obviously BHP Rio from the index point of view, but even government revenue. So particularly Western Australia with the royalty, but even the federal budget, part of the reason why the government often forecasted a deficit and then produced a surplus is because they forecasted too low an iron ore price. And then they're pleasantly surprised that they get the good price. And then LNG has been a big area as well.
Mm.
But we're starting to see now recent export data is gold's really stepping up now.
Mm.
It's because the gold price has gone so high and we're slowly producing more of it. Pretty much every gold mine is now making money, where 3-4 years ago, a lot of companies that are now worth several $1 billion were just washing their face. Things have changed a lot. So gold's certainly becoming a really big part of our export numbers of royalties and tax. And increasingly, I think lithium is possibly another one as well. Less so for the economy, but certainly for the market and copper as well. I mean, we're not massive producers of copper and aluminium, well, decent in aluminium, but copper we're not as big, but there are still some ways to play it on the stock market.
Mm.
Iron ore is one we haven't spoken about a lot. It's held quite well at around 100. Like, it has come down from over 200 and people thought it was going to, you know, keep going lower. Well, some people did. I'm not sure if you did. But it's really held around 100 bucks. What's your outlook for iron ore and some of the big miners this year?
Yes, yeah, I was one who expected to be softer than it has been. And I think there's a few things have been going for it. One is, well, the Chinese economy has been really weak. Housing, I mean, a lot of people read about housing's really weak, et cetera. China's been able to keep their economy going with exports. So they're exporting, I touched on before, EVs and solar panels and lots of other parts of machinery. But even steel exports are, I think it's at around 140 million tonnes last year, which is a meaningful amount. So that's been able to keep their blast furnaces going, hence still wanting to buy all our iron ore. The other thing that's gone on is that the cost curve for iron ore is very steep. What that means is that the marginal producer has a very high cost. And so when the iron ore price will historically get smashed, a lot of mines around places like Iran or India or parts of Africa will just shut because they'd all of a sudden lose money. And then the Chinese go, okay, we're now going to start buying more Aussie stuff. And then the price starts reverting back. And you've had this sort of boom bust type of thing. One thing that certainly Rio and BHP have told us is that since COVID, the costs of everything have gone up so much. And so if it's gone up by 20-30% in the Pilbara, it's only a few dollars a tonne. But if you're, say, an $80 producer in India, 30%, it's now up to 100. So that kind of seems to be where that's the marginal producer's costs have gone up by so much, and so is the price. And so that's kind of where we are. Now, we've got a lot of new supply coming from Simandou's just started up. That's been well known. It's been well flagged. So you do probably expect around $80, $90 seems to be where the price should settle. Not saying it's going to happen next week, but that should be where the price settles. And if China can start exporting 200 million tonnes of steel, then you know, maybe you do stay at 100. But with that supply coming and if steel production stays fairly flat, you should see that marginal cost drop down to 80, 90. That's
theory. So Simandou was called the Pilbara killer, nickname, but you know, $80 a tonne doesn't sound like it's quite killed the Pilbara.
No. Well, I mean, it's only starting up. It's starting up slower than it's meant to, which is always a way, but I don't think it's the killer. It's always hard to know, but I do think iron ore still has a fairly good sort of story. I mean, you think about industrialisation of India and other places. I know we focus a lot on China, but you've got to also start focusing on other countries, and India is certainly trying to rapidly industrialise. And anything about all those data centres, they need a lot of steel, a lot of iron ore. So there is still a positive sort of argument there.
So Greg, let's wrap all of this up for some key takeaways for the advisors listening today. To take advantage of this commodity opportunity, what is something that every advisor should do for their client portfolios?
Well, you should own resources. I mean, it's, I'm talking my own book here. I've been covering it for a while. But as I said, so many things in this in our daily lives need resources, steel, copper, et cetera. So it's part of our life. I know a lot of people get perhaps scared of the volatility. I said, yeah, grey hair. It can be some of the result of that. But the broader market's very volatile now as well. I think it, yeah, the ASX 200 currently is about over 20% is mining stocks. Is around 25% for the small odds. So it's a meaningful amount. A lot of that's gold in the small odds, but still a meaningful amount. So it's a big part of the index. So there's no reason why it shouldn't be part of your portfolio to look at, because there's a lot of money to be made on these types of stocks. Most Australian miners are making really good money at the moment across a whole range of different, you know, they're not penny dreadfuls. They're real companies with real cash flow and strong balance sheets in most cases.
So you said it's 20% of the index, and there's so many different ways to play this theme. There's the diversified majors, there's smaller pure play, there's explorers. But even, you know, for advisors thinking about their range of options, there's, you know, like passive thematic indexes, I guess also then pure play commodity ETFs, there's active managers like yourself. Obviously, you have a dog in the fight. You're going to say active managers, and in particular Milford. But I guess as advisors are thinking about the range of different options to play this commodity potential super cycle, how would you shape their thinking?
It obviously depends if you're looking at big cap or small caps for starters. Historically, a lot of people with the big caps just buy BHP and Rio, and they're good companies. They do give you exposure, but they're not giving you a pure exposure of one particular commodity. They are seeing copper grow over time. So there's a lot of debate as to some people say that those companies should be split up.
Oh, right. Okay.
Historically, yeah. They would trade at perhaps a higher multiple than a pure play because you've got more assets. You've got sort of a natural way, you know, balancing between like one commodity is doing well, one's not doing so well. So it kind of reduces that volatility of the earnings. But certainly one thing I've noticed over the last few years is there's been a real push towards some of the more pure plays, and they often do trade at higher multiples. I was thinking about a lot of the copper names around the world. They now trade at higher multiples than BHP and Rio. Part of that is because people want to play that thematic. So it's kind of what you're after. I mean, the way we play, we manage our risk by looking at all these different options. So in a small cap fund, you know, there's lots of companies to choose from. We're bullish on gold. We won't just bet on one company. We will try and reduce that risk. So stock XYZ is not the biggest, it probably has been at times, but it's not bad. It's usually you don't want to be your biggest overweight. So you want to manage that risk because, yeah, they are volatile. But I mean, also, as I said, all stocks seem to be getting quite volatile, especially during reporting season. So we like to have that diversity, and then we manage that risk, stock-specific risk, but also with a thematic, we think, okay, well, we like copper, for example, or we like lithium at the moment, and we manage that risk. And we try and be nimble as well with that. So, you know, if it's getting ahead of itself, you take the top off a bit, you manage that risk. And when you think things are oversold and everyone's hating it, you go, well, there's good value here. We've done the work. We've done the research. This company's good. We stress test to see, well, if the commodity price drops a lot, is this company's balance sheet going to be in stress? If it's not, then that's probably the one you want to buy during those downturns. And then when you get more comfortable with the trajectory of the commodity, then you might buy some of the more risky ones. And that way you kind of manage, you get exposure to good companies and get exposure to that commodity.
Mm. And are there any common mistakes that you see fund managers or advisors doing when it comes to investing in resources that might not have, you know, decent level of experience?
Yeah, I think one thing I know, especially in small caps, a lot of people try to run away from investing in miners, but they try and play a derivative. So they buy a contractor that's exposed to it. I've always personally sometimes struggle with it, especially if the contractor's only got short contract life, then you do get that volatility. So you're still having that volatility that you not necessarily would have with a miner that might have a 10-year mine life. So you kind of know what the volume is. You know, obviously the price changes every day with a miner. So that's one area I think where you can, not saying you can't get exposure through those contractors and those other derivatives, but miners, I think about some of the companies that I've looked at. I'll just pick two, like Evolution and Northern Star. I've known those companies for a long time. I remember when I started talking to management and started seeing them. They're only really small companies back then. Northern Star, I think when I first started talking, they had one small mine in Western Australia. Now I'm not sure what the market cap is, but it's looking to get close to 2 million ounces a year. It's a big cap stock. And here it was a company that said, this is what we want to do. They executed it, and they've been able to grow their business and become really successful without relying on the gold. Yes, the gold price has pushed them up in the last few years, but even prior to this massive rally in the gold price, I'll just pick those two companies. They have being able to build a business, create a lot of wealth for a lot of people, build almost something out of nothing. That's why I love going to some of these mine sites, and it was just dirty 3 years ago or whatever. I find that fascinating. So some of the companies, yes, some are dodgy, some aren't very good quality, but if you go through the quality ones, yeah, you can see some of these businesses, you know, their management have made real companies here. It's unbelievable. It's something I could never do. So things like that, that's where if you do the work and you manage the risk, there's nothing to be too scared of. You just got to be aware that there is more volatility than the underlying industrial.
Nice. Well, Greg, that brings us to the end of today's discussion. Thank you so much. It seems like it could be a big year for commodity stocks here in Australia. So
fingers
looking
crossed.
Forward to seeing how it plays out. But we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Greg.
And you can head to milfordasset.com.au to find out more information on all of the funds available at Milford. And a thank you goes to Milford for sponsoring Basis Points and helping us keep all of our content here free.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services License 540697.